We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. T-Mobile.com.
Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
It's Joe Benigno and Evan Roberts on The Fan.
Joe and Evan. Evan and Joe. On WFAN. If you want to be in the New York, no, gotta go to Joe and Evan, Evan and Joe.
All right, 305 on Fan Hour 2 of our radio program. Joe and Evan in the afternoon, 877-337-6666 is the phone number. Here till 6 o'clock, Big Mike Francesa will come your way. Paulie Rosenberg on the other side of the glass in Manhattan, Ernie at home. Acosta at home in Yonkers producing. We are live from the ever-mobile Town Fair Tire studio. Nobody, 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 and nobody on top of that beats Town Fair Tire. Nobody.
Today, we would have been in Baltimore, or these voices would have been in Baltimore.
Right.
And that, of course, the voices of the New York Yankees. First, Susan Waldman. Susan, how are you?
Hi, hello, guys. Susan. I'm okay. Hi, Joe. Hi, Evan. I'm sitting here and I'm watching David Cone pitch to Sandy Alomar in 1996. I think this is going to turn out to be a pretty good year, 1996.
Yeah. Yes.
But, you know, but there's somebody missing here, because this is the longest I've ever been away from this guy at this kind of year. And I asked Aaron Boone yesterday about the opening day lineup, and he wouldn't tell me. So I am guessing that who is going to be the opening day leadoff hitter. So, as Brett Gardner steps up to the plate, stepping up to the microphone, is the voice of the New York Yankees. Here is John Sterling.
Well, thank you, Susan. And once again, what a beautiful afternoon for opening day here at Camden Yards. Well, that's the fantasy part.
Degrees,
there you go. How are you doing, John? How are you,
degrees.
John?
Yeah.
What's the temperature in Baltimore? 59 in Baltimore?
Not bad.
That's what I'm hearing, yeah.
Yeah. Well, it's pretty nice here, too.
Susan, you tried, and so did we. We had Aaron Boone on last hour, and it's funny.
He wouldn't give us the answer.
We tried to get that answer. So what would the lineup be like? And he's like, a lot of people have asked me, but I'm not going to tell you. So it is a pure
guess. The rotation, though. He did do that.
Garrett Cole's pitching.
Right. He did give us the rotation, though.
Really?
He did.
Wait, I better write that down. You know, John actually is the best at lineups, and I'm not quite sure what that was about, because on the conference call yesterday, all the writers were trying to get him to say what the lineup would be, and I'm not quite sure what was going on there. I know Stanton would probably be ready, so he would be in it, but I don't know. But John, all the time in spring training, does his laps in the pool, and he makes lineups, so I bet John has a lineup for us.
Well, I have a lineup, but I don't know if it's Aaron Boone's. I can't even imagine why Aaron Boone wouldn't tell you what his lineup would have been here on March 26th, where we'd be lucky if we're playing games on May 26th. I mean, so even if he let you out on that secret, I don't think Baltimore could go to school on it. But I really expect, now that Susan told me that Stanton is ready to go, so you'd have, Stanton, Gardner and Clint Frazier, who had a very good spring, left to right, with Judge being out. And obviously, the lineup, the infield is set. Gio at third, and Gleyber Torres at short. DJ at second, and Voit at first. I think Andujar would have been the DH, and obviously Gary Sanchez would be the catcher. And I think we can assume that Gerrit Cole would be the pitcher. And there you go. It is a very odd time in our lives. by far the most odd time in my life, where along with Susan and Joe and Evan, we've had sports basically every day. You know, when there's an odd day off, let's say during the All-Star break, there's no football, basketball, or hockey, baseball, you know, has a day or so. I usually watch, I know, I'm nuts, but I usually watch the AAA All-Star game on one of those off nights. So it really is odd not having sports, and it tells you how much they're missed, and it tells you how much sports bring us together.
Do you guys, I'll start you with know, you, Sue. Sue, let me just ask you, do you have a, I'll start with you and then I'll ask John this question. Do you have a specific opening day that you remember that kind of jumps out at you?
I don't remember what year it is, but opening day always, even when I was a little girl, was so special. And I remember being a little girl and waking up, and I always wake up, and I did it again today. 4:30 in the morning, I am up. John is not, but he doesn't get up till later. But I am always up, and I remembered when I was a little girl, we had just moved into our house in Newton, Massachusetts, and I woke up and it was snowing, and I remember my father saying to me, don't worry, it'll stop before the game, and Vinny Orlando will have the field fine. And that obviously was in Boston. And it was, and I can remember it. I mean, just like like it was yesterday, I remember that. And today, I was telling John when I was talking to him, whom I talk to twice a day because I'm, you know, I'm not used to being away from John. And I was thinking, today it really got me. I woke up and the Orioles had sent me the thing that they sent to their fans with Jim Palmer narrating it. And I got up and it's 5 a.m. and it's dark and I really felt it for the first time. And it's really awful. It's really an awful thing. As a matter of fact, I'm sitting here watching Alan Embry is now pitching to Mariano Duncan. I'm watching opening day 1996. It's on MLB. So that's what I'm watching right now. I think that year turned out pretty well. But I don't remember what year it was, guys, but I do remember that feeling of, oh my goodness, it's snowing. What's going to happen?
Mm-hmm. Susan, was the first game of Joe? No, that was in Cleveland. So it must be 98, the day that we broadcast opening today at the stadium, and it snowed like hell.
No, you know what it was, John? Because we were talking about this. You're spot on about 96. It was the home opener with Andy Pettitte on the mat against the Royals. So it was about a week later after the game Susan's watching now.
Right. Oh, that was the year. 98 was a very high score. It was a football score. And they put the score on a football and gave it to Brian Cashman. That was his first day as the GM. In 96 and 97, Bob Watson was the GM.
Right.
I remember opening days that were instrumental in my life. The first game I ever did, I was so excited. My goodness. I was the junior member of the Braves four broadcasters. And we opened up in Cincinnati, and Gary Breedis hit a home run to win the game for the Reds. And then my first game as a Yankee broadcaster. Can you imagine how excited I was? I knew they were an awful team. It was 1989. But in opening night in Minnesota at the old Metrodome, or whatever it was called. Is it called Metrodome?
Yes. Yeah.
Yeah, okay. Tommy John pitched, and he pitched brilliantly, and the Yankees won the game 2-0 was not indicative of the year they were going to have. But anyway, those are the opening days I remember. But I really remember the snow game. I just didn't remember which year it was.
Yeah. You know, it's funny, John. I've been watching a lot of old games, kind of like Susan is with 1996. So I've watched a ton of games over the last couple of days. And one of the moments I kind of slipped on or found was your call. And this may be, I don't know if you feel this way, top five greatest call you've ever had, and that's the Rick Camp home run with that crazy Mets Braves game.
Oh, that's right. You would have that was the 4th of July into the 5th of July. You that's right. You did that. You were with the Braves then, right?
Oh, that was some game.
Oh my God!
There was a rain delay during the game, and the Mets took a 3-run lead in the bottom of the 13th. And Terry Harper hit a 2-out, 3-run home run against the foul screen. in left field to tie it. And then Rick Camp hit his tying three-run homer. I didn't like my call at all.
Oh, come on. It was great. John, it was great.
Can we find that somewhere? It's got to be somewhere,
I'm gonna
right?
We have to play it at some point.
We got to dig that up, John.
Oh, it's tremendous.
But obviously I'll remember it to my to my dying day. And you don't know that Rick Camp was considered, you know, like Sandy Koufax or Bob Buell or Hank Aguirre. He was thought of as the worst hitting pitcher in baseball.
Al Leiter.
And I'll set the scene for you. One game, I was working with Skip Carey, and Camp came up. And we were kidding about, you know, what a phenomenally bad hitter he was. And I used an old Russ Hodges line. I gave Russ Hodges name credit. I always do. And Russ Hodges would say, anyone up there swinging a shillelagh is dangerous. And so Skip said, well, obviously he didn't see Rick Camp. Anyway, two pitches before Camp hit the home run, I said, if Rick Camp hits a three-run home run to tie the game, it'll certify this game as the craziest in history. And two pitches later, he hit the three-run home run. Now, no one remembers that. Then the Mets scored five runs in the 19th inning to win the game. It was something.
16-13,
you know,
I think, was the final.
I actually played that for John. He was in the car. And I saw it online, and I played it for him, and he actually said the same thing. I didn't like my call on that, but he couldn't really hear it. But I was playing it to him over the loudspeaker as he was in his car. You know what's interesting? I had called some of the Baltimore guys. They gave me their lineup, no problem.
Oh, really?
Really?
Yeah.
Let's hear it. I'm kind of curious now.
It would be. Okay, this is what, and one guy, I didn't even know he was there. All right, this is what they thought would happen. The center fielder, Austin Hayes, the kid would be the leadoff hitter. Hanser Alberto at second base, batting second. In right field would be Anthony Santander. Chris Davis, who really had a great spring, yeah. And I think maybe he's whatever, would be at first base, the cleanup hitter. Renato Nunez is the DH. Did you know that Jose Iglesias was the shortstop on this team?
Susan, that's the fun part about the start of a baseball season. Right. You start to like see, oh, he's there now? Oh, okay.
Not exactly a bunch of household names on the Orioles here. I mean, let's be real.
Well, we've seen them 19 times. So, yeah. Dwight Smith would be in left. The catcher would be Pedro Severino. And Rio Ruiz, who actually can hit a little bit, would be the third baseman. And the starting pitcher would be the left-hander, John Means. Trey Mancini, obviously, on the injured list. But they had no problem giving me what their best guess of the lineup was.
So if there was a 162-game season, would they lose fewer games than the 108 they lost last year?
Oh, well, they've got better pitchers. I think they've got they have real names on that staff now. Besides Means and Alex Cobb, Wade LeBlanc is now on that team. Tommy Malone, who actually can pitch a little bit, I have no idea. That it doesn't really give you a lot of hope when you look at this lineup. Their closer is Michael Givens, and he's one of those guys. He's such a great guy, but the closer he gets to the ninth inning, the worse he gets. You know what I mean? When he was in the middle, he was great. And then as they moved back and back, as Richard Blyer's still on that team, we know him. Hector Velasquez came over from the Red Sox. We know all about our little Orioles that we see now for 19 times a year. John and I would have been at our favorite restaurant in Baltimore called the Prime Rib. Mm. And Jack Maldonado and John and I and Gary Thorne do this every time we're in Baltimore, our favorite place. And we're all sitting in four different places in New York, in the New York area. It's very odd.
Very strange.
Well, before you know it, at some point, this will happen in Baltimore. Maybe June, maybe July, but it will happen. We will take a quick break. We've got more coming up. We've got the great Susan Wallman, the great John Sterling. We'll even take some of your calls with them. So if you want to call on in, 877-337-6666. It is Beningo and Roberts here in the afternoon. Beningo and Roberts here in the afternoon on what could have been opening day, but we're luckily joined by the voices you would have heard if it was opening day, Susan Wallman and John Sterling. We had Aaron Boone on a little bit earlier. I know you had a chance to hear from him yesterday. What's some of the bigger takeaways you got from hearing from Aaron yesterday, Susan?
Well, there are a few things. One, he said about how he's keeping up with the players, and he texts just about everybody every day. There's still about 10 of them at the complex, the rehabbing guys, the guys that live there, and he's texting with most of them, and the pitching staff is keeping up with the pitchers. They're all on throwing programs. Aaron Hicks has begun a throwing program. He's home in Arizona. He's working with his own physical therapist there. I'm sure, I know he told you that Paxton's home in Wisconsin, and he's continued. He thinks Stanton is over the hump and is running aggressively, and he's fine. The interesting thing that I heard, that he knows that, do you know how he knows that Garrett Cole is going to be in shape? Because they live near each other, and Aaron Boone is playing catch with Garrett Cole
Nice.
I mean, and it's amazing. And, you know, social distancing, whatever. Well, it is kind of far to throw. So he said that Cole is fine, and evidently they live near each other up there. So that's how he ended the press conference by saying, okay, guys, I got to go. I got to go play catch with Garrett.
Yeah. I don't know if you saw this, Susan and everybody, but on social media, Garrett Cole had a video of him having a catch with his pregnant wife, and she had some arm. I mean, she was really letting it loose with some of those throws.
Well, she's an athlete. She's a really good athlete. I think she was a volleyball player. Who do you think took the picture? It was Aaron. He shot the video.
Right. That makes sense.
Right. You got John Sterling and Susan Waldman with us. Okay, I got to ask you guys this. How many years are you together now doing games?
This will be 16.
16 years you're together. So you guys can take this separately, but give me a moment in the booth. I'll start with you, Susan. Always start with the ladies. Give me a moment in the booth that sticks out with you and John. It doesn't have to be like a moment in the game. Just something that kind of, a funny thing that happens with you in the booth with John.
That would be that's all the time. But you know what I think about when I think about us in the booth is that before the beginning of a season and before playoffs and before big games, we'll either hug or I'll give him a kiss on the cheek. And it's a real like little family in there. Mm-hmm. And I don't, you know, there are a lot of things that happen during a season, but what I take from being John is all those moments, because it means a lot to me. And, you know, as John always says, the booth is really small and you really have to intrinsically like somebody and be with there. And we're like, you know, he's like my brother, big brother, maybe sort of older brother, I guess. But that's what I think. But I can't think of a moment, actually. Just the whole feeling, which to me is just like family, and I miss it a lot.
Mm. Well, actually, as truthful as I can be, you know, you figure we've averaged at least 170 games a year, more, obviously, because the Yankees have been, thank goodness, since 95, have been in the playoffs every year but 3 years. And you know what? I don't remember any one thing, but I used a Kurt Gowdy line. And Kurt Gowdy, when he was doing radio for the Red Sox, loved it. He said, you know, it's you and your engineer, and you can fly like a bird. And he said, about getting along, he said just that, what Susan said. It's a small booth, so you better get along. And I've known broadcasters who didn't talk to each other. Can you imagine how awful that must have been?
Yeah.
Two people on the air, and they wouldn't talk to each other. And a lot of broadcasts, they don't talk to each other. Well, this is the old days. You know, I can recall the old days in Baltimore. Chuck Thompson would do 4.5, and then either Messer or O'Donnell would do 4.5, and basically they never talked to each other, which I don't believe in. And but I would say this, along with Jack Maldonado, we have had a very, very happy booth all those years. And the same was true when the late Carlos Silva was there. So we've been very, very lucky. Also, we have a good team to do. You know, baseball is tough when you have a lousy team.
Oh, yeah, right, sure.
Boy, that's a long season.
Yeah. Yeah,
you know, you guys, I mean, you've been together for a long time. Even before that, Susan, you've done a great job covering the Yankees before that. So when you go back and you look at it now, 1995 was this incredible year in that the Yankees are in the playoffs for the first time in a long time. They would have been there in 94, we know, with the strike. They have this classic five-game series against Seattle. And little do we know that that loss in Game 5 would change everything. There's a new manager. There were a lot of offseason changes. And then, as you were alluding to, Susan, 1996 turned out okay. It sure did. They win the World Series, and little did we know we were going to see a dynasty. And I think it's even easier to appreciate it now, all these years later, because you see how difficult it is to get through these rounds of the playoffs. It's so hard, right. And yet those teams did it. Going back to Game 5, could you sense that there would be the changes we saw from the moment of Game 5 that loss to Seattle to everything that occurred in 1996, and then, of course, the dynasty starting? Take us kind of really through that evolution that we saw from that game to the birth of a dynasty.
Well, the 95, I do have a story on it. 95, I thought it was one of the greatest playoff series I've ever seen, even though the Yankees lost.
Right.
And the only way you could leave the ballpark was go down to the dugout and go through the dugout and walk out to center field, and the buses were behind the center field fence. And as I walked out, there was George standing in front of the dugout with the proverbial steam coming out of his ears. And he said to me as I walked past him, he said, "Don't worry, there'll be changes." He said, "Not you and Michael. You guys are great." And, you know, the thing you haven't hit, it was, even though Buck Showalter's had a fabulous career, he was effectively pushed out, fired, and they finally hired Joe Torre. And I cannot, as his friend, as his dear friend, I cannot tell you what that meant for Joe Torre. The greatest success he had in his life, he had the right wife, and they had a baby, and in 96, for about 100 different reasons, was our favorite year. And it began a fabulous part of Joe Torre's career. I mean, he went 12 years with the Yankees. He made the playoffs 12 years. And then when he and the Yankees agreed to disagree, he went out to the Dodgers, and they won the playoffs. They were in the playoffs
right.
every year for the next few years. So that was the fact that Buck Showalter did not trust his eyes. Now, in my mind, I trusted Mariano Rivera. And that was a stream of milk he was throwing. And if he had come into the ballgame two or three batters earlier, maybe none of that would have happened. And who knows what would have happened to Joe Torre. And it's a true story. It's absolutely true.
Mm. Wow.
Susan,
I got to ask
there's
you.
A couple of...
Go ahead. No, I want to ask you about Steinbrenner.
You want to what?
I want to ask you about Steinbrenner, because you were very good friends with Steinbrenner, and I
was. Before we get off this subject, though, let me go back a little further.
Go ahead.
Because there's more.
Go ahead.
94, after during the strike, Jimmy Key said to me, and has contended this all the time, that we would have won the World Series. He says it to me all the time, and every time I saw him, and up until we would have won the World Series. If that happened, 95 never would have happened. Buck Showalter never would have been fired, and it all would have been totally different. That 95 playoff series, that last game particularly, after that game was over, I was downstairs in the clubhouse, and there were guys in different parts of that clubhouse sobbing, including Jack, what was the pitcher?
Jack McDowell.
Yeah.
Who was probably the angriest, nastiest man I'd ever met in my life, and was sitting there sobbing. Buck was in his office sobbing because he knew his dream had died. And as John alluded to, you had to go out through center field. And after everybody was going out, I walked out with Mariano, and this was a very young Mariano Rivera, and he was just looking at it, and he had tears rolling down his eyes, and I said, "Come on, Mo, we're going to the bus. We got to go home." And he said, "You know, honey, this is the worst feeling I've ever had in my life. I don't ever want to feel this ever again." And he had tears streaming down his face. And we get on this airplane, and everybody knew what was going on. Everyone was crying, and Don Mattingly was going around saying goodbye to everybody. Hmm. And Buck and Angela Showalter were crying up in first class because they knew it was over, and they knew all of the things that were going to change. And it was really the most heart-wrenching 5 hours I've ever spent on an airplane.
Wow.
My whole life.
Yeah, it really was, you know, like the Bataan Death March. It really was a very unusual plane trip home. And if you're wondering now, how would I know this? Of course I don't know it. But there was no doubt in my mind, if he had brought Mariano in, zip, 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 he would have retired the side in the eighth and the ninth, and the Yankees would have moved on. It really is incredible what happened because of that, and then what happened after it.
Unbelievable. Susan, how about Steinbrenner? I got to ask you about him. Like I said, you were very, very good friends with him. It amazes me how this guy is not in the Hall of Fame. How is he not in the Hall of Fame? George Steinbrenner. It's ridiculous.
I don't know, and John can remember this. The late Eddie Einhorn came into our booth one day, and I believe it was when the new stadium opened, and we were talking about that, and Eddie Einhorn, who owned the Chicago White Sox, part owner, had said, he said, right on the air to the two of us, on the air, he said, "I don't know why either. Every owner in this business should get down on their knees and thank George Steinbrenner for making them all billionaires."
Yeah. George Steinbrenner taught the major league owners how to make even more money with their team. You know how people said, and you guys remember this, that when free agents came, agency came in, it will end baseball.
Right.
Actually, it improved baseball by yards, by miles. And George taught them how to sell the team with cable. He started out with cable and then his own network. Anyway, all the owners should make sure that George is in the Hall of Fame for what he did. Now baseball is a $10 or $11 billion sport, and it wasn't then. And George Steinbrenner had a lot to do with that.
We're talking to John Sterling and Susan Wallman. It could have been opening day today. We know what those Yankee teams turned into. And I mentioned this to Joe a couple days ago, that there was one moment in the 98 season where I said to myself, this is the greatest baseball team I've ever seen. And it was when Darryl Strawberry hit a game-tying grand slam against the A's in the middle of August. I'm not sure if that moment jumps out to any of you.
I remember that. It was out in Oakland. And I think he had a home run in extra innings to win the game. The Yankees won the doubleheader.
Yeah. Was there a moment that season where you said to yourself, and we'll start with Susan, where, oh, my God, this is the greatest team I've ever seen. Was there a moment where that hit you?
You know, that whole group, I always knew that somebody had said to me in the middle of all this, to me, 96 was my favorite year. I had a lot going. I mean, it was just an amazing year for all of us. 98, somebody had said, you know, you're going to look back and you're going to think of this as the greatest team you've ever seen. And you're going to think this is the greatest time of your life. And I said, I don't have to look back. I know what I'm watching. And you did know. And don't forget, didn't Tino Martinez hit a home run so that Darryl could get up?
It was with the bases loaded, so it may have been a different scenario. I remember it was like they were down. I think it was 5-1, and Darryl came up with the bases loaded to tie the game up. That's the vivid memory I have.
Or Tino did something after that when they won the game. But it was Tino was involved in that. But you knew that, and I think everybody knew when you watched that. And I'm not a big one on saying what's the best team you've ever seen, because the game is so different than it was even 5 years ago and 10 years ago. But I don't like that. But I really understood what I was watching in 1998, and I think John did. And I think everybody did. Mm.
You know, well, I can tell you this. At the beginning of the pregame, Michael Kay and I used to do a segment, opening segment, only a couple of minutes, you know, before the first wave of commercials would hit. And one day, when the Yankees came home, they had the bad start, and they came out of the West, and they came home, and they never lost. They even when a pillar had fallen down in Yankee Stadium, we had to go play at Shea.
Oh, yes.
They won that game.
Right,
they
right,
never lost.
Right.
And one day that's how we started. What do you think of this team? I mean, are they ever going to lose a game? This isn't baseball. And you know that team won 114 games, and they had a period, you're going to lose in baseball. I don't care how good a team you have. At some point, you're going to lose games. And they had a period from mid-August to mid-September where they were something like 12-16 or 14-16, and they still won 114 games and lost 48. And then they were, I think, 11-2 in the playoffs. So they won 125 overall.
You know what's amazing about that year? Because it didn't start out that great, if you remember.
And
that was the year we went to San Diego. We landed in San Diego. We were playing at Tony Gwynn's college place, and Mariano fell in a hole. Mariano fell in a hole and pulled his groin, and then they went to Seattle and ended up 1-3. And Paul O'Neill and David Cone called a team meeting, and there were all kinds of rumors that Joe was going to be fired because he was 1-3. And then they never lost again. But that was the year that we landed in Tijuana and had to take the bus to San Diego. One of the buses tipped over. Oh, it started off like you didn't know what was going to happen, and so it started off a little differently than it ended, but that was some year, boy, and that's something that if you were a part of that, you're never going to forget that, and I don't think the guys ever have.
You know, John and Susan, I want to jump up to the 2000 season, because that season, like the month of September, the Yankees, you know, they didn't win a game. I forget what the final numbers
that's
were.
True.
They couldn't win a game, and, you know, they wind up still, of course, you know, going to the World Series and winning, beating the Mets that year and all of that. But how about that? That was crazy. I think they wound up winning 87 games, but I forget what the actual numbers were, but at the end of that 2000 season, I mean, that was nuts.
It was terrible, and not only did they lose almost every night, but they were losing by a lot of runs. And finally, they clinched in Baltimore, of all places.
Right.
And Joe insisted that they celebrate. Hey, I know we've had a bad stretch, but you've played the whole year. You're in first place.
Right.
Celebrate.
Right.
And then, of course, they wound up winning the World Series. So.
You know, I think the other thing, and John's describing that perfectly, because we all were in the clubhouse and they all came in and the champagne was set up. And I believe they lost that game.
Yeah.
And it was they clinched because someone else had lost.
I see.
And the
right.
champagne was set up and everybody walked right by it. And John described it perfectly. Joe Torre turned around and said, you go back and so they did after that. But I think did they lose 17 out of 20 or 18 out of 20?
It was crazy.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Something like that. Yeah.
Yeah. They were look at it now. They were 84-60 at one point. They finished 87-74.
Wow.
So, I mean, do the math. 14 out of 17. It was. And then they go into the postseason, and it's like, all right, let's turn this on.
Flip the switch on.
Now, it wasn't easy, but they beat the A's in five, beat the Mariners in six, and we know what happened in the World Series. They beat another team in five.
Yeah, the other team, whatever team that is.
Yeah. Yes. We'll take a really
– you know
– go ahead, John.
The other team – obviously, he's kidding. The Mets,
yes,
his team they would have had this spectacular day. Look how beautiful it is today. I'm looking at my apartment out on the Hudson, and the
beautiful
the,
day.
The cars going up and down on the West Side Highway, and which is another eerie thing. You know, if you were in my apartment at 5:30, 6:30 in the afternoon, and look out, usually going up, it's a parking lot. Boy, now you could drive 60 miles an hour if you were allowed.
Yeah.
So it's what a strange time, huh?
No question.
Crazy.
No doubt
really.
About it.
Absolutely.
We'll come right back. We'll take a few calls with John and Susan, Benigno and Roberts here in the afternoon. Benigno and Roberts here in the afternoon. Let's take some calls with the legendary John Sterling and Susan Walbin. The toll-free number is 877-337-6666. And we'll start it off with Ray in New Fairfield. Hey, Ray.
Hey, how you guys doing today?
Good. Ray.
Yeah?
We are here. What's up, Ray? What's on your mind?
Hey, I'm a longtime Yankee fan. A couple of days ago, I turned 61 years old, so I have the pleasure of enjoying the Yankees in the 70s and the 90s. I was a senior in high school in 77, so that was a special time for me. And other than the Edgar Martinez disasters of the 90s, we got up to the dynasty part at the end of the 90s, and I just had a couple quick stories from a while back that you guys would be interested in. You were talking last week about 69 World Series and how the games, a lot of them played in, during the daytime. And I was 10 years old during that World Series.
All of them.
And my uncle in Massachusetts was at one of the games. And we used to congregate out in front of the house, and all 50 of us would walk up to the bus stop when the bus didn't stop every 10 feet. And we got off the school bus, and I remember beating the line, running my butt down the street to get in the house and catch the end of the 69 World Series. And I just remember that was such an exciting part for me as a 10-year-old kid, you know?
You know, it's funny. We were talking earlier, John and Susan, about how if this baseball season has to be altered and maybe they're playing in November, how cool it would be if there were afternoon World Series games. I don't know if you guys expect that, but that would be kind of cool to see in this era, wouldn't it?
Oh, God, please, I beg.
You know what? I would think that what they're trying to do is they would try and make as much money as they can, because they will lose a lot of revenue because of this shortened series. And I was listening to you talk about that before. I would bet it doesn't happen, because if they're going to have World Series games, I'm hearing all kinds of things, guys, that there'd be a neutral site, a place where it's warm, a place where there's a dome. And as soon as I heard afternoon, and we all remember that, and we all loved it, and sneaking
However, more people, but one thing, you know, people say these things, and it sounds so ooey-gooey. The reason why there are night games is because TV wants night games, because that's their biggest audience. So a lot of people wouldn't see the afternoon World Series or playoff games. So that's why they have them in the evening. I mean, I know it sounds like a good thing, allow the little kids to watch, but you can always tape them, and they can see them the next day. I have a theory that I haven't put forth, and I figure your show is as good as place to put it. If they could start in June sometime, they can play the rest of June, whenever, and then July, August, September, and October, and you could say, well, it might be cold. Well, it will be cold, but they play the playoff games and the World Series then anyway. Then in November have the playoffs, and for 1 year only have them in the retractable domes and the warm weather sites, and you could play all the playoffs and the World Series. So at least you would have a definitive end to the season, and then hopefully this coronavirus will be over and we can have a normal year next year. So those are – and I also believe, you know, you've heard now – they're thinking of doubleheaders. I think every team should be forced to play a real doubleheader, not a split, but a real doubleheader for the fans, one a week. And by that way, you could add more games, and maybe you'll have a 125 or 130-game season. And that should be enough to satisfy, quote-unquote, the purists, and then have the playoff games in November.
I imagine the Yankees winning a world championship and celebrating in, you know, San Diego or Toronto or some neutral site.
There's something
site.
Missing there, that's for sure.
Yeah, but people will get over it. They'll see the games, and then they'll have the big parade in New York. So if that's the way that we win the World Series, yay.
Well, you know what? The Yankees won the World Series in San Diego in 1998, and everybody had a very good time.
That's different,
though. It is very true.
No.
Come on.
Now, come on, Susan. That's completely different. Completely.
What? Well, because it's another – you think you're going to play somewhere
in Cleveland playing the team in their ballpark. You should be. It's on the road.
But you talked about – This is 1 year. This isn't going to happen again. What you try and do is make it as palatable as you can for everybody. And they're going to have to change the schedule around. It's not going to be. They're not just going to pick it up in June and go from there, I would think, because you have to have your division. Maybe you get rid of some games. Maybe you change some things around. There's a lot of things to do, and you can't. And maybe they play in November, so you put a.
You know, Susan has a good point. Maybe, first of all, I don't know how they're going to fashion the schedule, but maybe you eliminate Interleague.
Yes.
And,
yeah, I'm in
and,
with that.
And you
I love
play,
that.
And you play the biggest portion of your schedule against your division opponents. And there are some divisions in baseball, the National League East, the National League Central, who are tremendous divisions, where there may be three, four teams within a couple of games of each other. So that's a way to do it. I think anyone would accept anything if we could just play baseball again.
Well, I think that's, John, that's well said. I think at the end of the day, I may complain, Joe may complain, people may complain. As long as we get baseball, I think that's the ultimate win. Mm. Let's go to Tom in Fort Myers, Florida, who's on the fan. Hey, Tom.
Hey guys. Thank you all for being on there. I'm not going to drone on about how much I love John and Susan, but you were talking about broadcasts and stuff before. Can John and or Susan give us a comment about any dealings with Phil Rizzuto and what kind of broadcaster he was? And thank you guys again. I'll hang up and listen.
Thanks, Tom.
All right. Let me start, and then I'll go to John, because Phil Rizzuto, whom I adored, personally, just adored. The first time I ever did any play-by-play, it was in the 90s, and it was on MSG, and we were at Fenway Park. And I was still broadcasting, you know, I was still doing reporting for FAN. And it was supposed to be Rizzuto and Mercer, Bobby Mercer, my dear buddy. And Bobby Mercer got food poisoning in the press room.
Did we lose Susan?
I think we may have lost Susan, unfortunately. As,
are you there, John?
The reason I went, is I got food poisoning in a split doubleheader. It was the worst night I've had. The Yankees won the games.
Right,
and
right.
I got really sick. And it was one of those sicknesses where you have to leave one room and go to another room.
Yes,
and
those,
I got sick in the second game. And you know what the second game was? It was the longest nine-inning game in the history of baseball.
Is that true? Come on. Is that right?
Of course.
That's right.
What was it, Yankee-Oriole game?
No, Yankee-Red Sox. Yeah, and it's easy to remember it because that was the weekend where the Yankees – in Boston, beat the Red Sox 5 straight games.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, crazy. But anyway, that was what I remember about getting sick in the Fenway press room.
Right.
And as far as Scooter, you know, Scooter was Scooter. He's unbelievably great and in every way, and he was great to me. And his wife was really great to me, Cora. And one day, Scooter said to me, you know, Cora thinks I'm terrible. I make a million mistakes. And she doesn't think you make any mistakes at all, which you know is untrue. And, so I have very warm memories of Phil and Cora and of Yogi and Carmen. I mean, it was really great to meet them and make friends with them, you know, while they were here with us. They both got to, I believe, 90 or 91. So...
By the way, well, just to, yeah. Susan is back, and this is how great of a partnership that you guys have. As soon as we lost your line, Susan, John jumped in, and he was
took
telling
control.
A story. So
he
we're
did.
Tell
yes,
well,
did.
But we do
yes,
have Susan did. Back.
Well,
go ahead.
Where did it drop off? Did we get the cannolis part?
No.
No,
it was
we
right
didn't
at
get
the
into
beginning.
Cannolis.
No. gentlemen and lady, my beautiful, brilliant partner, and Joe and Evan, who I adore, I have to jump off. And the reason I have to jump off, I have to do an interview with another radio station, this one in L.A. So thank you.
Thank you, John. You gave us an hour. We appreciate
it. John, who's
that.
Better than you, John?
Thank you, John.
So thank you. And as far as you're concerned, Susan, I will talk
talk
with you soon. Yeah.
Okay.
I have no problem. Okay. Susan will fill in perfectly. So thank you all.
All right, John. Take care. The great John Sterling.
Okay, so you didn't hear my story?
No.
No, we didn't hear it at all. No.
No.
Oh, it was a great story. Where did you get to?
Nowhere, Susan.
All of a sudden, you were gone.
Oh, no.
Yes.
It's one of my best stories ever. Okay,
let's hear
I'm
going
to do it again because you've got to hear this.
Of course.
I loved Phil Rizzuto. Loved him. And my first, back in 94, 95, I was still reporting for FAN, and I'm sitting in the press box at Fenway Park, and John Moore, the producer of PIX, comes over and says, Bobby Mercer had to go home. He got food poisoning from the press room. You have to come in and work with Phil. And I said, okay, and I came in, and he starts, and I'm doing play-by-play, and he's doing play-by-play, and we're telling stories, because obviously I grew up there, and he was best friends with my buddy Johnny Pesky, the late Johnny Pesky, and we're telling stories when I was a little girl, and I was in heaven. Fifth inning, he gets up, and he says, I'll be right back, you'll be fine. And he leaves the booth, and he leaves me alone in the booth. for an inning. And John Moore is talking to you and saying, just, it's okay. Just keep going. Keep going. He comes back an inning and a half later with a tray of sandwiches and a tray of cannolis. And he gives me a cannoli and sits down and starts talking like nothing had happened. And he said, you did fine. Wasn't that great? And that was Phil Rizzuto.
Wow.
Besides being a fabulous man, by the way, he was a really good broadcaster. If you listen to, for example, Roger Maris's home run off of Tracy Stallard, listen to him way back. He was good. One of my favorite things years ago, I was still in theater, and he and Bill White were in, I was in listening to the radio and I was driving somewhere, and he and Bill White were in Toronto, and Phil had forgotten to pack his shirts. And he kept entire inning, kept talking that he didn't know what to do. And Bill said, well, you can go and buy another shirt. And he said, well, where would I go? I'm in a strange country. I don't know where I am. And they went on for an hour. I was hysterical. He never told the score. He never said what was going on. But Phil had not brought his shirts. And it was fabulous. And nobody cared what the score was. And that was Phil, too. But he was a kind, wonderful man. I loved him. I loved Cora. And I treasure our relationship a lot.
We appreciate you guys coming on today, and I can't tell you how excited we are for when you guys are on again calling a Yankee game on this radio station.
Well, thank you for having it. I think this worked pretty well since, like, there are six of us on this thing, and we're all in different places.
That's true.
Amazing.
It's true.
It is amazing.
Really worked out. Thank you, Susan. We really appreciate it.
Susan,
thanks,
be well.
For
take care.
Us on, guys.
Thank you.
You too, guys. Take care of yourselves.
Susan Waldman and John Sterling, the voices of the New York Yankees. And before you know it, you'll hear their voices again.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.